This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's John Doe Banks Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see johncast.net.
The night sky for November 2013. Well, after sunset, as it gets dark, that very lovely region of the sky containing Lyra with its bright star Vega, Cygnus with Deneb, and lower down, Aquila with Altair, those three stars forming the summer triangle, are setting down towards the west, but are still quite visible, actually, early on. Towards the southwest, there's a fairly blank area of sky, but it contains a very nice constellation, that of Pegasus, the winged horse, which is actually upside down, as seen from the northern hemisphere. There's a very nice little globular cluster close to the star Enif, which is sort of the head of the head, and that's worth looking out for. If you start at the star Alpheratz, which is the top left-hand star of the Great Square of Pegasus, move two stars around and up a little bit to the left, turn sharp right, move to another star, and then a bit beyond, you should see a fuzzy glow if the moon isn't too strong, and it'll be new moon around the 3rd of November. That fuzzy glow is, in fact, the nearest giant galaxy to us, the Andromeda Galaxy, or M31. There's a little chart on the Night Sky website to show you how to find it. And again, around new moon, there's a good chance of sort of backtracking a bit from Andromeda and finding M33 in the constellation Triangulum. So it's well worth having a look for those. As the evening wears on, Taurus, with its lovely clusters, the Hyades and the Pleiades cluster, arising towards the southeast. And high overhead, we have Cassiopeia, and the band of the Milky Way is running through Cassiopeia. Going down towards the left, we come to Auriga, and the bright star, rather yellowish in fact, of Capella. And perhaps you might spot, just above the eastern horizon, the stars Castor and Pollux, the heads of the twins, the heavenly twins, in Gemini. So a lot to look out for in what's a very nice month to observe the heavens. Well, what about the planets? We'll start with Jupiter. It rises now at about 9 p.m. and it transits, that's when it's due south, at 5 a.m. in the morning. So it's a sort of a morning object. But it'll then be about 60 degrees above the horizon in the south, shining at magnitude -2.4. It's lying in the constellation of Gemini, very close to the 3.5 magnitude star Wasat, which is Delta Geminorum. It stays pretty steady, actually, because on November the 7th, it begins its retrograde motion westwards across the sky. By the end of November, it rises at around 7 p.m. and transit at 3 a.m. Its magnitude will have increased to -2.6 and will have a diameter of nearly 45 arc seconds. Obviously, with a small telescope, you can observe the four Galilean moons as they weave their way around it, and at times be able to pick up the great red spot, visible as an indentation in the south equatorial belt. This month we have a chance of seeing shadow transits of Io and Europa, taking place on the nights of the 5th, 6th, and 12th, 13th of November. Again, in the highlights on the night sky page, the details are given. Quite a nice thing to see, actually. The shadows show up beautifully as sharp, circular, dark spots. And you can also, in fact, see two shadows and Io all together on the morning of the 6th. What about Saturn? Well, it passes behind the Sun on the 6th of November, so we're obviously not going to see it early on. But by around the 22nd, it might just be visible, not that high, above the eastern horizon in the pre-dawn sky. In fact, on the morning of the 22nd, it is very close to Mercury, only about 0.4 degrees separation between them. And in fact, we may be lucky, and just above the horizon, below the two, we might spot Comet Icen. Well, Mars has really begun its apparition. It rises at about 1:30 at the start of November, shining at magnitude plus 1.5, so it will be easily visible with binoculars in the pre-dawn sky. Its magnitude increases somewhat to plus 1.2 during the month, and its angular size increases from 4.9 to 5.6 arc seconds. And that's about the point where a small telescope will begin to see some features on the surface, like the polar caps. So we could well say that Mars' apparition has really begun. It's currently at the beginning of November in Leo, and it moves into Virgo on the 25th. Mercury, in fact, passes through what is called inferior conjunction, that is, between the Earth and the Sun, on the 1st of November. So later in the month, it becomes visible again in the pre-dawn sky from about November the 9th, shining at magnitude plus 0.8. It brightens throughout the month and remains well visible until early December in what is its best morning apparition of 2013. Finally, Venus. Well, it reaches its greatest elongation from the Sun on the 1st of November, and that's usually when it's best seen. However, two things conspire against us. At this time, the ecliptic is at quite a shallow angle to the horizon. And even worse, Venus, which has a declination of minus 27, is very close to the furthest south in the sky it can get. In fact, on the 6th, it'll be further south than at any time since 1930. So the result of both those things is it will lie quite close to the horizon in the south-southwest, at about 9 degrees at the beginning of the month, perhaps 14 degrees to the end. So it will not really be as prominent as one might expect. Well, finally, what about some highlights? And we do have one really major one this month. But let's begin on November the 6th. Venus, as I've said, isn't going to be well seen, but it will lie below a thin crescent moon about 45 minutes after sunset on the 6th. So that's one nice chance of observing it. I've mentioned the shadow transits on November the 5th and 6th and 12th and 13th. Again, is a good month to observe the Andromeda Galaxy. I've given the star chart to help. We do, on November the 16th, 17th, have a meteor shower, the Leonids, usually quite a good one. The Earth is passing close to the tails of Comet Ujjembri, left by Comet Temple-Tuttle. Sadly, however, this year, the meteor shower occurs at the time of full moon, so its light will only really allow the brightest of the fast-moving meteors to be observed. So late evening on the 16th is probably the best time to observe it, into the early hours of the 17th. It's not a bad month to observe and try and find Neptune, and I've given the star chart on the night sky page. It lies in Aquarius. The real highlight, we hope, this month is that Comet Ison should become visible in binoculars or a small telescope in the hour before dawn, probably best seen from around the 16th of the month onwards. And again, I've put a star chart on the night sky page to show you exactly where to look. And I might say, if you do have a tablet, an Android tablet or an iPhone, I think, you can get a very nice app called Sky Safari Plus. It's about £9. And that allows you to download the comet's orbital elements, and it shows its positions over the next 2 months, when we hope it could become spectacular. Its brightness is predicted to reach magnitude 3 to 4 during the month, so even visible to the naked eye if you know where to look. However, it must be said that recently it's not been brightening as much as predicted. So sadly, this means that Ison will not be the spectacular comet that many had hoped for. As it nears the Sun, it's moving rapidly across the sky from Leo across Virgo and Libra into Scorpius during November. On the 17th and 18th, it'll be very close to Spica in Virgo. Around the 21st, it closes on Mercury and Saturn, and will lie below them from the 24th onwards. But by this time, it will probably be lost in the Sun's glare. It reappears after passing round the back of the sun very, very closely in December. Now, we believe it has a diameter of about 3 kilometres. It goes within the Roche limit of the sun, which could mean that the comet's nucleus will break up. How that affects its brightness in the days when we begin to see it following its passage past the sun, it's very, very hard to predict. But there are lots of websites telling you about Ison. Just have a look, search for them. One of them is called Waiting for Ison, and you'll get the latest details. And finally, I've briefly mentioned it before, on November the 26th before dawn, there's a very close conjunction of Mercury and Saturn. And it's just possible that you might see Comet Ison visible just above the horizon below them. So I hope we get some clear nights during the month and you get some nice observations.
Thanks for that, Ian. And for our Antipodean listeners, here's John Field with a southern night sky.
Kia ora and welcome to the November Johncast from Carter Observatory, Wellington, New Zealand. After sunset, we see our winter constellations sliding down towards the horizon as our summer constellations rise in the east. Scorpius's tail will appear as a bent curve of stars, and to Māori at this time it is known as one of the four pillars on which Ranganui, the Sky Father, rests. The other three pillars are represented by Sirius, or Takarua, the Belt of Orion, Tautoro, and the Pleiades, Matariki. These three pillars also mark the rising points of the sun, Te Rā, at the solstices and the equinox. Takarua marks the rising position of the sun at the time of the summer solstice. Matariki marks the rising point of the sun at the winter solstice, and Tautoro marks the equinox. The Southern Cross is now at its lowest in the sky, just above our southern horizon. Te Māori is Te Panga, the anchor. It is sometimes seen as being the anchor of Tamariri's waka, or canoe. In this waka, he sailed across the body of Ranganui, the Sky Father, placing the stars Nawhetu on his body. These stars could then be used to navigate with, and their rising and setting mark the changing of the seasons. There are two other crosses that can be found along our southern horizon. These are the Diamond and False crosses. Crux is the only official cross. The Diamond, False, and Northern crosses are all asterisms, easily seen shapes made of the stars that form part of an official constellation. The lowest star in the Diamond cross may look a bit fuzzy. Keen eyes may discern that it is a single bright star surrounded by a cluster of stars. This cluster is known as the Southern Pleiades due to their resemblance to the Pleiades star cluster, and they are a lovely sight in binoculars. Sitting along the Milky Way, halfway between the False and Diamond crosses, is a bright haze known as the Eta Carina Nebula. Binoculars and small telescopes reveal swirls of luminosity and many stars and star clusters. This nebula is 4 times larger and brighter than the famous Orion Nebula. It is estimated that this nebula is between 6 and 10,000 light years away. As a comparison, the Orion Nebula is only 1,300 light years away. To one side of the nebula is a bright orange star known as Eta Carina. This star is one of the most massive stars in our galaxy and perhaps one of the brightest too. Echina is at its highest above the Southern Cross. Between Echina and the cross, we find the two Magellanic clouds, nearby galaxies of our Milky Way. Near to the smaller of the clouds can be found 47 Tucanae, the second brightest globular cluster in the night sky. The constellation of Tucana, the toucan, is supposed to represent the colourful bird from the tropics of South America. You will need a good imagination to make out a bird out of the faint stars that reside in this part of the sky. The brightest star in this constellation is a magnitude 2.8 yellow giant, about 200 light-years away. Beta Tucana is a grouping of 6 stars sharing a common motion through space. November offers us the opportunity to observe a meteor shower that has been known to produce a spectacular sight. Known as the Leonid meteor shower, this annual event is associated with the trail of dust left behind by the short-period comet, Comet Temple-Tuttle. This comet was independently discovered by two observers in 1865-1866. The comet has a 33-year orbit that comes very close to the Earth. This allows the Earth to pass through the dust and other debris that is lost from the comet. Observers notice that on average, every 33 years, the number of meteors observed during the shower showed a marked increase, and these are called meteor storms. These meteor storms are related to the individual trails within the main band of material being much denser. The 2013 shower is not expected to reach high levels, but even so, it's always possible that an unexpected peak could occur. The best time to observe the Leonids is about 3 hours before sunrise on the mornings of the 15th to 17th of November. Unfortunately, this coincides with the full moon, and this will severely hamper viewing conditions. Leo is one of the 12 traditional zodiac constellations and represents a lion. To southern observers, the lion hangs upside down in our sky, with a distinctive sickle shape marking the lion's chest and head. Orion and Taurus straddle their celestial equator and therefore visible in both hemispheres. The brightest star in Orion is called Rigel, from the Arabic word for foot. For southern observers, Orion foot is above his head, and Betelgeuse's shoulder is down towards the northern horizon. Due to its position south of the equator, Rigel is always visible from the south pole, whilst Betelgeuse never rises. Rigel has a companion called Rigel B, first observed in 1831. This star shines at magnitude 6.7, but is overpowered by the glare of Rigel. To Māori, Rigel is called Puanga, and its norm rising in the lower North Island heralded with the changing of the Māori calendar year. Betelgeuse marks the shoulder of Orion and is a prominent red star in a night sky. This star is a red giant that has used up all its available hydrogen in its core and is fusing helium. This produces a more higher internal temperature that leads the surface of the star expanding and cooling to about 3,500 degrees Kelvin. The surface of Betelgeuse is cooler than the surface of our star, and this gives it its distinctive red colour. Once its nuclear fuel is used up, this star may explode as a supernova, perhaps in the next million years or so, or may have already happened. Supernovae happen on average every 100 years or so in our galaxy. The only problem is that many of them may be on the other side of the galaxy or hidden by the plane of the Milky Way, and are therefore rarely seen. Taurus is one of the 12 zodiac constellations, the group of constellations through which the Sun, the Moon, and the planets move. It represents the god Zeus in Greek mythology. From late November to mid-December, the Sun is opposite Taurus and can be found in the 13th and lesser well-known constellation of Ophiuchus. The Sun spends more time travelling through this constellation than it does through Scorpius. During November, we will hopefully see the comet Ison brighten to naked eye visibility. This comet will swing past the Sun on the 28th and 29th of November, and at this time, it will be just over 1 million kilometres from the surface of the Sun. The comet will probably put on its best display after perihelion, and by this time we'll be moving into the northern sky, so we may miss out on seeing this comet at its best. We wish you all clear skies from here at Carter Observatory.